Accession number 30276, Reel 4.
It was exciting to get on a big ship. You know, it looked a big ship to me at that time. But it wasn't so... Once you got on it, you start to realise it wasn't so pleasant at all, because we slept in bunks. It was very stuffy. The food wasn't wonderful. The toilets were on deck, and all they were an open trough with seawater pumping through. And so the idea was that the seawater pumping and flowing one end and all these men sitting along it, that was fine until the ship started to roll and pitch. and so that sort of life, and then everybody got sick, and there was the ship was, we were going around the bight, and that's some of the roughest seas imaginable, and everybody was sick, and there was vomit everywhere, and this toilet and everything. It wasn't a cruise. And the strange thing happened about that, just fate, that we got final leave in Melbourne, and I think we got 5 days, and 2 days into my leave, I met a girl I'd known some time ago, and I took her out that night, and it was, you know, things were going pretty well, and I'd made a date with her the following night, and I came home, and my father said, "There's a telegram for you." And there was a telegram to report back immediately. The leave was cancelled. And it appeared that these ships had come in with Italian prisoners of war from the Middle East, and we were to go back on these ships, or go somewhere on these ships. And I thought about it, whether I'd finish my leave and go back and say, I wasn't told, I wasn't there at the time, my parents didn't know where I was. And being a bit conscientious, I decided to go back the next day, which I had to report. And I got there just in time. The whole camp was packing up, and we were folding the tents and we're off. And we went on the city of Paris. By the time we got off at Fremantle, it took us, I think, 7 or 8 days. The fellas that didn't come back, they were sent by train to Sydney, and they caught the Queen Elizabeth, the old original Queen Elizabeth, and they travelled on that. Now, that they had cabins to sleep in, they had a canteen, a wet canteen, a bar, and they had a beautiful trip because they had stabilisers and all that sort of thing, and they had a wonderful trip. And when they got off the boat, they were all charged with failing to report for duty, and they were fined 10 shillings. Well, I could have had, instead of having on that rotten old ship that I was on, I could have had the Queen Elizabeth for 10 shillings. You know, that was just one of the things in life I've always regretted, that I would have had that trip on the Queen Elizabeth. But at the same time, you know, getting on the ship and walking around the gangways and whatever.
First time on board a ship.
The only thing I'd been on a ferry before that, but that was the first time on a ship. And it was quite an adventure, quite exciting. And,
So what was it like to sort of see... Oh, well, you'd gone through the bite, but what was it like to be going away from your homeland?
Well, we thought we were going to the Middle East, actually. But what happened was we were going to Western Australia. Because at that time, it was just after the Pearl Harbor, they thought the Japanese might land in Western Australia. It was especially populated. I think Western Australia had a population of about 250,000 people. At that time, it was a very sparsely populated, and it was a huge, you know, state. And we were sent up to Geraldton, and we formed along the beach there. I think they thought that was the best, most desirable place that they might land, at Geraldton, or near Geraldton. And we were sent up there. We got off at Fremantle, and I remember there was a brass band waiting for us. We all got off at Fremantle, and we finished up at Geraldton. And we're up there for a little while, and then they decided that that the Japanese probably wouldn't land there anyway, and then we went to Darwin. They started to bomb Darwin and decided that, well, that's where they were probably going to land, because they were convinced that the Japanese would land in Australia at that time. Although it was never said to the populace, they weren't told, the newspapers didn't say so, it was all hush-hush, but they must have, things that happened and the way they sent us around, I think that they were pretty positive that the Japanese would land in Australia, and probably would have, had it not been for the Battle of the Coral Sea and the Japs being soundly defeated there and losing so many ships and one thing and another. I think that was they'd advanced almost, the Japanese had advanced down through Malaysian Peninsula and through Indonesia into New Guinea, almost unopposed until they got to that point when they tried coming into port near Port Moresby along the Kokoda Trail, they were stopped. Also at Bougainville, and then the Battle of the Coral Sea. I think that's when it came to a halt. They ran out of steam. And from then on, it was just defeat after defeat, push back, until the war was ended.
So in relation to your experience, here you are on board ship going up the coast in Geraldton, at least seeing another part of Australia.
Yeah.
How are you finding it?
Great. Oh, it was great. It was seeing things that the climate over here was different, and of course of Geraldton, that time it was that we were swimming in the ocean and catching fish, and I think it was wonderful. I can recall that we were in these sand dunes on the coast, and there were four of us. We had a machine gun. They still had the Vickers machine guns at that time. And rifles, and we were going to repel the Japanese if they landed there. You imagine this? There was four of us in the section, and anyway, we had to get our supplies. We had a pole, and we walked through the sand dunes, over the sand dunes, to a road where there was a tree, and a supply truck would come around and hang a jerry can of fresh water, meat, or whatever we had. In on the branch of the tree, and we'd collect it and put the empty containers back there, tie them on this pole, and we'd march off through the sand dunes. And shortly, because it was absolutely deserted, there was nobody there, we were out walking around naked like natives, you know. We did for the and it was Gerald in that time was infested with rabbits. There were millions of them, so we were shooting rabbits and cooking those, and we were catching fish, and I thought it was the best holiday I'd ever had in my life.
And you were getting paid.
Yeah. And we didn't see a soul from the time we were there for about 2 weeks. We never saw a living soul. And never even saw our supplies coming in that was hanging in a tree. So that was, I thought that was, actually up till that point and getting up to Darwin, the army life was very good. And as far as I was concerned, as I said, I was unattached, I was single, I was 18, going on 19 by the time I got to Darwin, and it was good. I've got no regrets about being in the army. I think that to me it was an education. I got a lot of confidence in myself. I probably improved my English and writing skills. And although I had a very elementary education, when I came out of the army, I was able to get a job in local government, and I finished up being administrative officer and prosecutor for the city. And that meant I was going to court with... And having legal battles with barristers. Now, you know, if it hadn't have been for the war, I don't think I would have ever had that opportunity to do that.
Well, people talk about the war giving them confidence.
Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely. And I can say that I had no post-traumatic syndrome or whatever they call it, and I don't... There probably were men that had it, but I never knew about it. I mean, I went to reunions and for years and years after, And I don't know anybody that was going mental or wanting to commit suicide or having this post-traumatic syndrome business. I came home, got my discharge. I remember that when I came home, my mother had... I walked up to my street and I looked down at where we lived not far from the corner, and my mother had put this bunting out in front of the house. And they knew I was coming home. And they were waiting for me, and I thought, oh, bloody hell. I felt so embarrassed, I went up the back lane. I came in the back way. I couldn't bring myself to walk through the front door. My mother out there and some of the neighbours waiting to welcome me, and this bloody bunting on the front of the house. And I thought, oh, God. So I sneaked in the back way. And I must admit, I was a bit of a
killjoy by the
way. I was a bit, yeah. Yeah, so.
You can't be too popular with that. Beyond Darwin, what happened for you? Where did you go?
Went to New Guinea, and then from there to came back to Australia.
But what was your initial experience of a war zone?
My initial experience was going into action, and everything was going fine. We were moving along, and somebody was shot. And I remember the message passed down, when I had to pass down, where do we bury? And that hits you in the guts, you know. When the first time you hear that word, where do we bury? And it really gives you a bit of a shock. You get a nasty feeling in your stomach. This is life and death, you know. And
but up until that time, you'd sort of been avoiding
it was like a picnic, yeah. Mm. And
there were things distracting you from it. You hadn't seen or heard gunfire. When was the first? I wanted you to tell us where your first billet was, where you heard gunfire, where you
in Darwin was the first place, because there was the bombing raids. That was the first sort of gunfire and enemy action I experienced. And, So...
Tell us about your initial experience of a bombing raid in Darwin.
Well, the bombing raid in Darwin, strange enough, I was on a wharf up there. We went to... When we arrived there, the wharf wasn't big enough to take the ships that they were trying to get in. And we were sent to join some engineers and extend the wharf. And there was an American ship in the wharf. And the tide in Darwin is such that ships, low tide, they're sitting on the ground, more or less. And this ship was an American ship, and it was full of aerial bombs. Must have been thousands of tons of the damn things in there, and they were unloading them. And we were working on the wharf, driving piles and extending the wharf to take more shipping. And the siren went, and there was a raid on. And I can remember we were told to get off that wharf as quick as we could, and because they were frightened if a bomb landed on that ship, and it couldn't move, it was stuck there. And I remember as we were driving off the wharf in an old four-wheel drive, there was an American, I think he was a seaman. He was running along the wharf, and we said, jump in. And he said, I can run faster than that bloody thing. He took off. Anyway, they didn't hit the ship or anything, and eventually the raid was over, and there were Spitfires flying around, and we were watching the aerial battles going on, and they drove them off. They dropped a few bombs, but they didn't do much harm that day. That was the first time I actually experienced gunfire and enemy action, I suppose, yeah.
What did that mean to you? How did you take it?
Well, it was all pretty a bit scary, I suppose, but you know, it was also sort of exciting. I think I was always excited by those sort of things, and being a bit young and stupid, I suppose, I didn't. I just get excited.